Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass is deep to his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done three things. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
Welcome to Cannell and Bell. Casey Kiernan sitting in for Danny Cannell, who is in Atlanta, Georgia for Super Bowl 53.
Yeah.
Rajah Bell, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. I got my flights out this afternoon.
I was going to why aren't you in Atlanta?
Yeah, because somebody had to hold it down today. I mean, like, sure, we're here,
right.
Right?
That's right. And we will toss it out to Atlanta in a bit, but we have to break down the big breaking news in the NBA this morning. Your reaction to hearing that Anthony Davis will not sign an extension with the Pelicans has requested a trade.
Okay. I mean, everyone should have known this. You should have seen this coming, right? Like, the timing is interesting. Like, I would wonder kind of what went into them deciding to get this out here now. My gut is that you're going into All-Star break. There are going to be a lot of people around. It's a good time to have, you know, some of these conversations that players have amongst themselves for him to kind of, you know, put his toe in the water, so to speak, and see what the climate is in some of these potential, like, suitors of his in the trade market. The other thing I do appreciate, though, is what his camp came out and said, what Rich Paul came out and said in terms of him wanting to give New Orleans the best chance that they could have to get the best deal that they could get for him. So he didn't want to hamstring them by doing this late in the process.
Right. And so I wonder if they're trying to get this done by this February 7th trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean.
Or the next one. Because he's a free agent in the summer of 2020.
Yeah. If you get a deal done, you can get a done the best deal you could potentially
get.
I would imagine that it's a little late in the game to swing it before this February deal, unless someone is just going to come out.
Except I think what you said earlier was correct. We've all seen the tea leaves.
You should.
So people probably
they're
have
prepared.
Packages
yes,
ready
they're prepared.
To go. So
they have files.
This could go down.
Pull it out. Here you go.
And I'm just thinking they shifted All-Star a little bit, right? Because Remember when Boogie Cousins got traded from the Kings to the Pelicans, and he was told in his ear in front of the media that he was traded.
Right.
How crazy was that?
Yeah, that was nuts.
But they've switched it around a little bit at All-Star.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Anthony Davis is a fantastic player. He's statistically having his best season, like, pretty much across the boards in terms of points, assists, you know, rebounds, all of that. He's in his seventh year as a pro. They've been to the playoffs twice there while he was in New Orleans. Once, I think they got out of the first round last year. It's enough of a sample size for him. Like, I heard a lot of people this morning saying this is what's wrong with the NBA. Like, you know, he needs to be able to stay in New Orleans. They did it the right way.
He did. He already signed an extension.
He did.
So the point is, and this is similar with LeBron James, when he was in Cleveland, he left for Miami. I'll take LeBron as an example, and it applies to AD. If you get drafted by this team, you're there for 4 years, and you sign another extension, right? And so you had that plus the extension, 7 years to build around him, and you can't get it done. That is a you problem. That's on you.
Correct.
That's not on the player.
Correct. And what I would say to that is I actually, again, would applaud a guy coming out and saying, like, look, move me now. You're giving that team every opportunity to go out and recoup assets.
Paul George did this. It's why they have Victor Oladipo.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty interesting the way, like, the media at times, like, I feel like some media is, like, anti. I feel like you're either NFL or NBA, right? And if you're NFL, you're skewed towards the NFL and you're, like, anti-NBA to some of the stuff I hear, right? So why is a player painted in a bad light when he says, look, trade me? I don't want to be here anymore.
Right.
He's giving you the opportunity, again, to recoup assets in his loss. The other scenario would be I've given you 8 years, which is more than enough, right? And now I'm walking and you get nothing.
Yeah.
He's actually trying to help you to some degree.
It's people who resent free agency for some reason.
Yeah.
And those people who say that, guess what? Too bad, because that's the way
that's
it
the way
is.
It is.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm trying to look up this tweet that I saw, because obviously you think who could trade for Anthony Davis, right? And there are many, many teams who could do it, and I can't find the darn tweet, but that's
was this
about here the, it is. Yep. Boom. Hearing from sources, this is Brad Turner, who works for I don't know, because he doesn't say that's your bad, Turner. Hearing from sources, if Lakers want Anthony Davis, the request has to begin with Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, Ivica Zubac, and a number one pick. What's your reaction to that haul for AD?
Sure. I mean, that's a haul. Ultimately, I'm saying Kuzma.
Ball,
you want to
Kuzma,
retain Kuzma. Like,
Zubac.
You would probably give up Ball, Zubac, and a number one. And then it centers around, like, whether Kuzma is the third person in that deal or not, right? Like, the framework of the deal seems okay. Now we got to kind of tweak it. And if you're the Pelicans, yes, I want Kuzma. I want everything that I want. Everything on your in your shopping cart that I want, give it to me.
Yeah.
But the problem is, like, deals don't work like that. Like, you know what I mean? There's some negotiation that goes into that. And at the end of the day, you got to move. You got to move Anthony Davis. And there are not that many teams out there that are full of assets that are going to be able to swing for Anthony Davis. And the flip side of that is, even if they do have the assets, there are not a lot of places where Anthony Davis is going to give them a commitment that he's going to want to stay. And that's the other part of it.
Right.
Right? So the Lakers do have some leverage in this situation. Boston can't make a move for him until, you know, after July because of the Kyrie deal. So they have some time to try to figure out what those pieces look like. Framework seems okay. I'm not trying to give up Kyle Kuzma if I'm the Lakers.
I think they should give up Kyle Kuzma. They should give up Ball. They should give up everyone.
Sure.
From what I've seen in my experience just watching the NBA and watching it from afar, is that even four B players do not equal an A+.
Correct.
And I think what they've seen in this time, this beginning of the season, including like a Brandon Ingram, they weren't willing to move him and put all the eggs in the basket to get Kawhi Leonard. And now a few months in, I bet they're like, well, shoot. We should have done it. You know, and you don't want, if I'm the Lakers, I don't want to be bit by that again, saying we should have done it. And then have the Boston Celtics get in.
Swoop in and, yeah.
Exactly.
No, I hear you. But again, you have time here, right? Like you have some time. Well, not that much, but you have the first swing at it. And so again, Kuzma, if it winds up having to be Kuzma, do the Lakers probably swing that deal? I would imagine that's not going to be a deal breaker for them if they get stuck on that, right? And they can get Anthony Davis. But if I'm the Lakers, I'm not putting him in the first rendition of this deal, right? Like and here's why. Brandon Ingram is a ball stopping type of player. He's good enough on bad teams to get a bunch of points. But his style, if you put him with two A+, is one that is going to require the ball. He's not good enough to have the ball in his hands when you have Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
Right.
Bad team, not a whole lot of guys around him. Give him the ball. Let him go crazy. Mm-hmm. Kyle Kuzma is the type of dude that'll spot shoot. Like, he'll catch and shoot.
Right.
You know, those are the type of pieces that you're going to have to put around 3-and-D guys when you have an Anthony Davis and you have a LeBron James. Guys who are going to monopolize that ball, get buckets, and assist. So you're looking at Kyle Kuzma, not as just a pure talent necessarily, but as a piece that would fit going forward. Do you know what I mean? So you're not looking at him so much as whether he's an A or a B.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. Looking at Kyle Kuzma as a piece that's going to fit when I get Anthony Davis into what I'm trying to build, not just because he's better, let's say, than like a Brandon Ingram or someone like that.
So AD plus LeBron plus Rondo.
Yeah.
Do you think that's enough for them to challenge the Warriors in the playoffs?
Yeah. Okay. I do. Look, you throw
LeBron.
You
don't need more time to cook the chemistry and all that? I don't know.
You put LeBron with, look, he was challenging with Kyrie and Kevin Love.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, yeah, sure, Rondo's not Kyrie, but Anthony Davis is a whole lot better than Kevin Love, right? And so you put LeBron with a whole lot of stuff, provided he's healthy, and I give them a chance against anybody. That's just me personally. Now, yes, there's some chemistry that has to work itself out. You're going to have to supplement around those edges with some shooting and some guys that can defend. And at the end of the day, it might not be this year. They could push, though. You know, they'll be a viable entity in the playoffs. And then by next year, depending on what happens with Golden State and some of that free agency, you now can attract another star, potentially. You'll have the money to sign him in free agency. Now you got something to cook.
And that other star would be maybe Kawhi Leonard, although we've heard that Kawhi would prefer to go to the Clippers.
Yeah, Kawhi.
And the Clippers have enough room for two max guys. And so, you know, obviously you think KD and Kawhi in LA with the Clippers. That would just be insane.
Sure.
We're going down the rabbit hole.
Sure.
With AD, are we sort of thinking that it's a Celtics-Lakers two-horse race there? Is there anyone else in your mind that should be in?
Listen, I said it this morning. Everybody kind of thought I was crazy. I would not count out the Oklahoma City Thunder just purely in a vacuum. I don't know. I haven't looked at, and this is probably my job, and I'm not doing it well this morning. I haven't looked at their assets. I don't know what they can give up to get Paul George. But I would imagine just knowing Sam
AD,
Presti.
To get AD.
I mean, AD, sorry. Yeah. This is like behind the scenes with Sam Presti. If people think that Russell Westbrook was salty about the way the KD thing went down, like multiply that by five, and that's probably how Sam Presti in that front office felt. So if there's a grudge and a need to beat Golden State, like they have one. They haven't been public about it,
They're motivated.
Now you've got, you know, Paul George is playing fantastic. Like Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
You would be putting packages together and anything else on that roster, Steven Adams, anything else.
Jeremy Grant's been great.
Yeah. Dennis Schroeder, like first round, anything you have, you would be taking a swing. I don't know if it gets it done, But they're a team. I would not count them out because Sam always pops up in a deal that you don't expect his nose to pop up in.
Always.
He's always there.
Who thought that they would have PG, Russ, and Carmelo Anthony, even though it didn't work out? I mean, no one thought after they lost Kevin Durant.
Right.
And the fact that they re-signed Paul George said a lot.
Said a lot.
No one would have bet that. He said he wanted to be in L.A. So that front office is smart. The thing that popped into my mind, would he want to live and stay in Oklahoma City? From what I've been hearing from Anthony Davis, the bottom line really is winning.
Winning, yeah.
So if he got there and they were able to win and challenge Golden State, I think they could retain him.
I do. You have now put together three pieces that actually really fit together. It's just like what Golden State has. Sometimes you put together these stars and there's a real duplication of skill sets. Like you're putting together three kind of unique skill sets that all can do certain things. I mean, it's really fascinating because, again, I don't know what they have to give up for him, but like to your point, and I said it when we were off air, that guy just pops up, Sam Presti, that is, in OKC, in deals like out of nowhere. You never see him coming, and there they are sitting in the middle of the deal.
You know, this is what makes the NBA so great.
It's really
sorry, but like here we are, this breaks. We're imagining that piece on this team, that team, and that.
It's Super Bowl week.
It's Super Bowl week, and this is what we kick off with. And this is why the NFL would like their free agency to turn into what the NBA, in fact, every major sports league.
Yeah.
Because this is one thing the NBA has on every other major sports league. I mean, this is good stuff. All right, so let's talk about the Warriors. An anonymous player said that Gordon Hayward on the Celtics is a liability. I mean, is that the truth? Is that a fair assessment from what you've seen so far?
I wouldn't say he's a liability. They are clearly better. Do we have the numbers, guys? Can we put the numbers up there on the board? I think we have a graphic to show Gordon's numbers and the Celtics' numbers versus when he's on and off the court, right? So there you have it. Like, they are statistically better in just about every category in terms of offensive rating. You've got 3 points better. If, you know, effective field goal percentage, they're 4 points better. Defensive rating, they're substantially better. Was I reading that backwards?
So.
Yeah. No, defensively, they are much better without him on the court. Offensively, it's a marginal thing.
Now, this is, he comes off the bench. He's playing against the second unit. So naturally, all this is going to be skewed.
Correct. But I got caught up in those numbers and I read them wrong. Here's what's really taking place here. Gordon Hayward, when healthy, is a fantastic NBA player. The injury that Gordon Hayward suffered was catastrophic. It was almost career ending. He's not the Gordon Hayward that you remembered in Utah, the one that you signed $127 million for 5 years. He's not that guy yet. He could be that guy. So the conversation for me becomes, like, I don't believe that Gordon Hayward's a liability, so I'm going to put that to bed. The conversation within the Boston Celtics has to be like, Gordon, look, you're not looking like yourself yet. There's still a lot of rust on that.
Mm-hmm.
We're sticking with you. Like, we've committed. Like, you're a part of this going forward. You know what I mean? Like, this is you. This is Kyrie. This is Jason Tatum. You're here. But we need to use you the way we see fit using you right now for the betterment of our team and our chances to win a championship.
Yeah.
And I believe Gordon to be the type of pro, he's made a lot of money, to be secure enough to say, okay, I got you. Because Gordon has to know that Gordon isn't Gordon right now.
Right.
He feels that. He's not crazy. He knows that there's some rust there and he hasn't got his legs under him and maybe his confidence isn't what it was a year or so ago. But that will all come back, you know, provided, you know, you don't crush him like mentally and spiritually. You have to protect it.
Yeah.
Let him know that you still love him. Let him know that, you know, this is the way we got to use you right now until you're healthy. And then I would believe that next year coming into the season that he'd have all his pop back. He'd have all his mojo back.
Agreed. You look at Paul George, similar injury.
Yeah.
Catastrophic. And now he's having his MVP type season.
Correct.
And not only is it several years removed from the injury, he also changed teams, had the whole year in that system with that team. Gordon Hayward had to sit on the bench, right, with that injury. All year, he's making two comebacks.
Yeah.
Or two, things.
Debuts.
He's gotta fit. Yeah.
Yeah.
With a new team and also from the injury. So I totally agree with you.
Correct. And what we haven't even talked about, which is a big topic of conversation a couple weeks ago, is all of the internal, like, discourse that's taken place kind of with the Boston Celtics team in terms of just this power struggle for whose ball it is and who's going to be the alpha on this team. Like, you've heard Kyrie come out and he threw the younger guys under the bus.
Yeah.
You heard the younger guys like Jaylen Brown and them come out and say, hey, we kind of did this without Kyrie. Like, Gordon's somewhere in the mix of that. Do you know what I mean? Like, Gordon, it was his team in Utah. He came to Boston. I believe they signed him before they signed Kyrie, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Right? So, like, you know, Gordon's lost in the shuffle of that. There's some real you know, emotional and uncertain, like, feeling that goes into what's going on there to put on top of the injury and learning the new plays and learning to play with guys. He's got some figuring out to do there in Boston.
It's a crazy day in the NBA, but it is Super Bowl week.
Yep.
And up next, we are going to toss it out to Atlanta.
Pete, no doubt.
Go.
Danny
Canoe. They're in Atlanta. We'll be back.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
All right, welcome back. Canel and Bell hanging here at the World Congress Center here in Atlanta, Georgia, man. This is my first time on air this week. You've been up since, like, the crack of dawn. Doing hits for HQ, right? What's that stunned look on your
I'm
face?
I'm a little short for Bell, aren't I?
That's right. Our boy Pete Frisco is going to hang out with us just a little bit, help us preview the game. Raj, I'll be back in a minute. We got to get to the Saints call, which I still can't believe is still a story. It's such a non-story. But Saints fans are still upset about it. Roger Goodell still hasn't talked about it. But before we get to any of that, we're here, Atlanta. Your thoughts? Like, what's your most excited thing about this week?
Game time.
Yeah.
The ball kicks off. Look, this has become a monstrosity, the Super Bowl. This is my 29th. When I started going in 1989, this is how long ago that was, by the way. The 49ers scored 55 points, and they were yelling, "We got the speed limit," in the locker room, because that's what the speed limit used to be. So bottom line, it's changed. There was like two stations on Radio Row. It was in the hotel.
Really?
And now look at this. I mean, it gets bigger and bigger.
It's out of control. You're doing media day. I keep calling it media day, but it's media night now because it's in prime time for TV, obviously. I mean, as a reporter, do you even get anything done? Because I've covered it a couple times, and it's like such a zoo. It's like a circus out there.
No, you know, once in a while, if you know a guy, you can pull him off the podium and talk to him. But no, most of the time, no. It's become, you know, for the schtick, right?
It's more like for Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood and some of the
little
people.
Little kid asking a question, right?
Which actually, sometimes you get the best answers out of players because they're used to coach speak. Yeah,
right. So the little kid will come up and he'll ask a question, and he'll get treated a lot better than you would if you got to ask a question.
The other thing, so you got media night is tonight, but you also have the team send-offs. We saw the Patriots had a pep rally, which I think does speak to their fan base, which I grew up in Miami, and Dolphins fans, South Florida fans don't like saying, you know, when you trash them as a bad fan base. But I don't think they're getting that type of send-off, the Dolphins or any other team for that matter, if they're going to a Super Bowl or World Series or anything.
In some cities, like if Jacksonville went to a Super Bowl, they'd get that kind of send-off.
For the first time. But would they get it for the fifth?
Not for the 20th time.
Right, exactly.
That's the amazing thing about it. And, you know, people talk about Patriot fatigue. And I had a couple guys in Boston call me and ask me if there's Patriot fatigue. There's not. And you know what it's almost morphed into? 5 years in, it was Patriot fatigue. Now it's Patriot respect.
Right.
You
but they're not,
them.
But they're not taking it as that. And I think it's kind of funny that we're still here. Brady obviously was chanting that yesterday at their send off. They've had that bet against us, you know, mentality. I don't know about you, but I think, like, I would put it at probably 50% of more of NFL analysts across the board at CBS, ESPN, Fox, you name it, had picked the Patriots to go to the Super Bowl in the preseason. Like, I was one of them. And I actually got off that. I'm kind of kicking myself for picking the Chiefs because it was in Kansas City. But I don't think they were forgotten about. Like, but yet they're using this as their mantra in their locker room. And I guess if it's been working for them, why not ride it?
You know, one year I was in Pittsburgh, and the Patriots won the Super Bowl, I mean, won the championship game in Pittsburgh, and they're all coming in the locker room, the media stand there waiting, and they're all yelling at you, not a one of you believed in us, not a one of you believed in us. And I asked Willie McGinnis, I remember when he was playing, he's one of the guys saying it. I go, who did we pick then? We picked you. What are you talking about? How do you not have respect? So, look, you know how teams are and players are. They'll take anything and run with it. You know? I picked the Patriots last week to beat the Chiefs. I mean, who didn't pick you?
Right. No, but that's all they're going to hear. And that's all they're going to hear is the criticism and use it as motivation
as they can.
And
they're favorites, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they can't do that bet against this thing anymore. They have to stop that message. And Brady's chanting, he's basically saying, I'm still here, because he's the only one people thought could potentially retire. He comes out and says, zero chance of retiring. And I'm like, why would you? The game is as friendly as it's ever been. He knows his offense inside and out. It's just, why would you hang it up? He's still playing at an elite level, and he wants to go down as the GOAT. What else is he going to do? Go do his TB12 method? He has the rest of his life to do that. So I say, why wouldn't he keep playing?
Yeah, you mentioned the game being quarterback friendly. I mean, the game is catered to the quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, and in talking to old quarterbacks like yourself, everybody says, I mean, look how easy it is. Free releases. You know, everybody plays zone, and you give these guys free releases. You stand there and carve them up. He's not going anywhere. His mind is lethal right now. You know, you can see it sometimes when he tries to uncork a deep ball, and it's not quite there, but that mind's still there, and that's why he's as dangerous as he is.
He can get rid of it. He knows exactly where to go with the football if he gets in trouble, and that's a result of the mind, like knowing it like the back of his hand. Hey, I know where Edelman's going to be exactly. I know where, you know, my back is going to be on the flare out. Do you think Gronk continues? Because I think he's done. You think he is done?
He's only 29, which is insane to think he's done.
He looks like he's 39.
He looked like he was carrying a piano all season on his back. I mean, no, I think he's done. I think he's got other things he wants to do, like going to WWE and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if his body is taking a beating.
It has. And the Miami Miracle, when he looked like he could hardly get out of quicksand when he tried to make the tackle at the end of that, you know, the play at the Miami Dolphins game, which was embarrassing
for
him.
You know what's amazing though, Danny, when you think about this whole run? It started against this Rams team, and the Rams were the greatest show on turf, and nobody could beat them, whatever, and they ended up beating them. And you look at the players of – where are the Hall of Famers on this Patriots team? I was talking with Sal Palantonio today. We were talking, and he says Ty Law needs to get in because they don't have enough Patriots. Is Ty Law a Hall of Famer? It's debatable.
Right. I don't think so.
Is Richard Seymour a Hall of Famer? It's debatable. Those are the guys. Where are the Hall of Famers? You can't count Randy Moss because he really only played there for the short period of time.
Yeah.
Where that tells you the greatness of Belichick, it tells you the greatness of Brady.
It absolutely does. And it goes to, because last week I picked Kansas City because I thought Kansas City had more weapons. They absolutely had more weapons offensively, and they might even have a couple more playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, but it's that Brady-Belichick effect, which is why I've been saying for 3 to 4 years the safest bet in all of sports is that Brady and Belichick are going to get to the Super Bowl, even with all the distractions and all the stuff that they had. Do you think any of it was real, the Brady-Belichick rift that was last year, or do you think we in the media made a big deal? Because I think it was real. I still don't think Brady loves Belichick when they're out there professing love for each other, but I think they have a common goal, and they both have an intense fire that burns inside of them that they don't care about differences. They just want to think about, hey, we want to win a Super Bowl, and that's all that matters.
I can relate sort of a story from when I used to cover the Jaguars, Coughlin and Brunel. Brunel was just brutalized by Coughlin. I mean, he just destroyed him nonstop. And to the point where I had a story that there was a rift between the two of them. And there was.
At practice and stuff? Like just chewing him out?
He threw an interception against Tennessee in 99 in the rain in a play that shouldn't have been called in the first place because it was raining and all he had to do was kick a field goal and they would have tied the game. So he calls the play, throws an interception, and he reams them in the media and then reams them the next day. So I get wind of it. And so I, of course,
have put
a story.
It out there.
So, but the development it evolved, he tolerated them. And after about 10 years, when Brunel went and played at other places, he came back to me and he said, you know what? Of all the guys I've ever played for, I'd go back and play for Coughlin again. And I think that's kind of the relationship with Brady and Belichick. Yeah, he doesn't like it when it's going on, and he's not treating him like a king. But he respects them, and they respect each other, and I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think they have that common goal that they want to win Super Bowls, and that's all that matters. Everything else you can put aside. One of the bigger storylines is the youth of Sean McVay, 33 years old. I'm sitting there thinking, like, when I was 33, I think back, I was just out of the NFL. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, like, what my next career was going to be. It was just a mess. And I think about the presence that he holds and commands in front of that team, and I'm impressed. That being said, it is the biggest stage in the game. Belichick has all the experience. How significant do you think that age is?
By the way,
how
much does it matter? I was on my horse and buggy going to work. no, it matters, but does it really? Because I still think, see, here's my thing. I think when you look at McVay, he's 33 years old, but I've talked to guys on his team. Andrew Whitworth being one of them was very friendly with him. It's a weird dynamic. They're like coach player, but they're friendly.
Yeah.
And he said, in 5 years, you're going to be talking about Sean McVay like Nick Saban. And it stunned me a bit because he played for Nick Saban at LSU. And he stunned me a little bit. And I said, how? And he said, you guys don't see him. He is as disciplined a coach as he's ever been around. We see the cheery talk a lot to try and imitate John Gruden's voice and da-da-da-da-da and his memory and everything else. But we don't see that side of him. But he told me stories of players who he jumps on them he gets on them. So I think he's got – everybody likes to overshadow what he really is by saying he's just an offensive wizard, but he's much more than that.
What is going on with Todd Gurley?
You know, in Mobile, guys were saying they were wondering if he jaked it, if the moment was too big for Todd Gurley. Now, there's nobody has definitive information on that, but he wasn't hurt.
Right.
And he didn't look upset.
Right.
If I'm Todd Gurley and I'm standing on the sidelines in the championship game, the biggest game of my life, I'm angry. He looked like he could care less, right?
Yeah.
So for me, there's some validity to that talk. And if he, you know, curled up in the fetal position in the biggest moment,
right?
What's he going to do in this moment?
When it's amplified by about 100 times.
Is that not a story this week, Danny?
Yeah, it should be. Absolutely. And they both tried to, just smash the story down because Gurley admitted saying, I was sorry, which maybe that tells you more about what you're alluding to. McVay said he just didn't give him enough opportunities. I think you'll find out early in this game because if he doesn't, he's got to be fine. Like, he's played in big games in college. I just can't imagine a guy who was – we had Todd Gurley in the MVP conversation 2 years ago. Like, he had that type of a year. I would think, to me, it's got to be more injury-related. And I'm hoping a lot of this is, you know, people speculating. There's a lot of speculation because he did vanish and because he wasn't there. But I think there is a tendency for a play caller, when a guy is hurt, that you do come a little bit too over-concerned. And the minute he has a rough start, that you're thinking, oh, maybe he's still hurt. And then you stop giving him opportunities.
That was the game the week before he was supposedly hurt. Right. And he went for 100.
It's true.
So that goes out the window. I mean, there's
It is peculiar.
It's funny, though, too, Danny. Gurley was the one that everybody was sure would play in the big moment, and we wondered about Jared Goff in the big moment. And as it turns out, Jared Goff was big in the big moment, and Gurley was on the sideline telling everybody he was okay if his deep snapper won MVP.
What was most impressive to me about Jared Goff was that he started rough in that game.
Right.
Because I was watching that thinking he is going to crater in this moment, and he didn't at all. He fought through it, and I really almost saw the moment was the fake punt. Like, and it wasn't even something he did, but it kind of just, there was a new energy on that sideline. They started giving him a little bit more play action. He got outside, had a couple easy completions. And as a quarterback, sometimes that's all it takes is just a couple, like, hey, a positive play here or there. And then you just kind of relax and settle down because then the rest of the game, he was phenomenal. And because I was concerned about Jared Goff this postseason. Started with that Bears game with 4 picks, and he kind of struggled. There was a 2-week stretch there. It was ugly, and I was worried about him. Now I'm not worried about him at all.
No, but the reason he struggled in those games was the line struggled.
Yeah.
I mean, the line got whipped by the Eagles, and they got whipped by the Bears. Well, the line has been outstanding in the postseason, and so he's not struggled. So
right.
Everything they do is off that outside zone play.
Yep.
Everything.
Yep.
And if Gurley doesn't have the outside zone play going, then the offense might have some issues. So
yeah.
that's something to keep an eye on.
All right, we're going to have all week to get into the X's and O's. We're going to let you go get a break, get some food, a little workout maybe. Maybe
not.
All right.
Football season.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We'll get Rajah back in here. We got to break down the Saints call because Roger Goodell still hasn't addressed it. There's conspiracy theories abounding. Yeah. We're going to break it down next on Kinnell and Bell. All right. Welcome back to Kinnell and Bell, hanging out here in Atlanta. Our boy Rajah is in Fort Lauderdale, but he is boarding a plane this afternoon. How pumped are you to be here for Super Bowl week? Like, I know you're pumped.
Yeah, I'm pretty fired up. I haven't been to Radio Row in a long time, man. I don't like crowds, though, so I'm trying to figure out exactly how crowded it's going to be, what I need to do to kind of stay low. But generally speaking, I'm pretty fired up.
I'm just going to warn you right now. Like, there's actually a section behind me. There's like a little walkway right here, and that's where fans can go. And they're like, there'll be fans here by the end of the week. And it's interesting how it starts, because Monday and Tuesday are kind of like sleepy and everybody's just arriving and we're getting like technical glitches figured out as we get going. But then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, it like just keeps amping up the energy and like the star power of the guests that we'll start getting on and you'll start seeing on different shows, because basically all you're getting here today are like locals. Like, you'll get some Falcons and some local, you know, stars. But the week as it goes on, that's when the big hitters come in. So you're actually smart to come in tomorrow for the first show. Like, this, that'll be when things start getting better.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. So let's go. So you and I think, differ on our opinion on this call that took place in the NFC Conference Championship game. I think obviously it was a bad call. I've been pretty vocal, and Saints fans were not happy with me because I told them they need to just get over it. Like, we stop hearing you guys cry about it. But there's been some more to the story that came out over the weekend, because they've been looking for Roger Goodell to come out. Gail Benson says they have to come out and address it. Benjamin Watson says, hey, Goodell, your silence is deafening. We need an answer. I don't think they owe them any explanation. It was a bad call, and yet here they are. The NFL comes out, and they actually fine Nickell Robey-Coleman $26,000 for the illegal helmet-to-helmet hit, which should have been a flag. So essentially, the NFL is admitting there was a penalty that was missed. And yet, I still think that's enough for the NFL to do. Raja, do you think they should come out and say something more and have some sort of a formal statement addressing this?
Yeah, I mean, except you're not really admitting that you did anything wrong, right? Like, you're not. You're levying the fine, but you're not really coming out and saying, like, yeah, we made a mistake on that, which I do think you owe the city of New Orleans, and I think you owe your fan base. When things go well, if you're going to stand up there again at the podium and soak in all the applause and adulation, like, when things go wrong, you have to stand up there and say, look, we blew it. Now, that's not going to change anything for the Saints. They don't get to play in the Super Bowl. We're not going to replay the game under the clause that whatever it is the commissioner is allowed to do. Like, we're not doing any of that. But in that moment, the crew made a bad call, and it was the wrong call, and put it to bed, and that should be the end of it.
But what do they do then? Do they start admitting every bad call? Because that's where I think Goodell is worried about. That's why I don't think you've heard anything from the NFL, is because if they do that, then they're going to have to come start addressing them every game. And they're going to have to start saying, hey, well, that was a missed call. This was a missed call. I don't put any of it on Roger Goodell. I put it on the head of officiating, Al Riveron. He's the one that should have come out. And apparently he was the one that did call Sean Payton and said, we messed up, but put out a formal statement after the game, and all of this just goes away. If you just admit it right away and have the head of officiating come out and say it, then nobody's asking for Roger Goodell. That's where the thing, like, this is kind of below Roger Goodell and his authority. Like, but by delaying it and not saying anything at all from the officials, then it's just bringing more glaring attention on Roger Goodell, which is why we're finding ourselves still 8 days after still talking about it.
Right, but like, that's your job as the commissioner, is to, like, if you don't want to stand up there and that's below your office, then have whoever's office it falls to do it. Get out there in front of it and put it out there. And to your point about, like, every call, now, I don't think you have to come out and make an apology for every call. I'm not even saying that you apologize for this particular call. I think that you can own the fact that it was a bad call. And this is different, right? This is an NFC Championship game. You're going to the Super Bowl. And so I'm not saying this is the rule. This might be the exception to the rule. I do, however, think that you should come out and address that. And to your point, and to mine, I guess, again, if it's not Roger Goodell, I'm fine with that. Then Roger Goodell needs to have the head of officials, Riveron, come out, put a statement out and say that that call was blown, and it is what it is. But someone, I think, needs to address it, or it does work its way up the food chain and eventually fall at the doorstep of Roger Goodell, and he has to deal with something that, to your point, could be below his office.
So now we find ourselves in this position, and you've got conspiracy theories abounding. You've got people that have, like, their Zapruder film, like, from JFK, where they're showing different angles. Was the ball tipped? Was it not tipped? And then the latest, and this one's kind of a really crazy story, which, again, I don't think has any validity, but because of the NFL silence, it's just letting everybody run rampant. Now the NFL circles, that supposedly NFL circles are concerned that four officials in that game actually live in California. I think this is such a dumb story, and I can't believe that Adam Schefter put it out there, because I think it's a non-story. But it's going to get talked about. And Saints fans, trust me, Raja, I've had them call into my radio show for the past week. They believe that the NFL fixed this game because LA is launching a new stadium next year, that the fix was in for the Rams. And it's so dumb, because if they were going to fix the game, why did they let the Saints get the ball in overtime? Like, and what would have happened if the Saints would have run the ball three times and kicked a field goal and would have won it? Like, would it have been a failed experiment? It just is really dumb. But I think this is the bigger problem. The NFL hasn't addressed it, so it still allows these theories to just run rampant.
Yeah, this is thirstiness by the media. Like, you're reaching now. You are thirsty. You need to, like, I can, yes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, look, I'm not going to go that far with the conspiracy theory, because there's a whole lot of things that you'd have to do to make sure that you could predict the outcome of a game, and you didn't do them. Like, that game was in the balance. It could have very easily been won if the Saints, you know, had run the ball for a first down, let's say, you know what I mean? And you don't really control that as an officiating staff. What I will say, though, Danny, is, I don't put a lot of credence into the fact that those guys are from California and the California team won. Like, I don't get into that. But I did have a beef as a player with officials who fraternized with my opponents before the game. You know, and you'd see it a lot in the NBA. And I don't know what the NFL is like. I'll ask you. You're all kind of out there on the court. It's a relatively small court. And I would see guys over there, like, having, like, tea and coffee and damn near smoking a cigar with the referee, laughing and asking about kids. And I just didn't like it, you know, because I felt like I didn't have that relationship, nor did I want one with those referees. And I did feel like there was a human element when it came time to give that guy a call or me a call. I felt like that was a little conflict of interest, you know, and I don't know what it's like in the NFL. So I don't put that kind of stock in where they're from regionally. But I do think there are personal relationships that officials develop with some guys that could bear fruit in certain situations.
Absolutely. The guy they call the white hat, it's the head official in a game. I always tried to suck up to him and be like, hey, man, how's it going? And they were all like, I tried to develop that relationship so that I would get a good call. And if there was a rough in the past, or they might have some sympathy on me, I tried to play to that human element. I think it's very real, but there were never guys that, you know, went out for drinks after a game. Just the NFL's not conducive to that. Like, you don't hang in the same circles. You're out of there. As soon as you're the road team, you're bouncing. You're getting out of there. Like, I could see it becoming a little bit more of a conflict in the NFL or in the NBA, where there's just more time and there's less players. So it's easier to get that kind of relationship built. So I wouldn't love it if it was that close. I mean, but I do think a lot of quarterbacks try to get as close as they can as the officials, as they can. All right. One of our producers, I'm not sure who it was, had the fantastic idea of putting up both of our career experiences in Atlanta. I played here for 2 years, mostly as a backup. Our team was awful.
Right.
So we have a graphic built up. You actually played 10 games when you were here. Your record was 7-3. Very impressive.
Winning.
You had 6 points a game, 2 rebounds, 1.2 assists. Yeah, you were fine. My statistics were embarrassing. Like, yours are good. Like, you're putting yours up, totally respectful. This is the bad thing. I was in Atlanta when they were 4-12 and 5-11. Anytime I came in was when we were getting blown out by like 21 or 28 points, and I would just get shellacked. I sound like I'm making excuses, because I am. And I will say this, at least three of those 9 interceptions, at least 3 of them were Hail Marys, either at the end of game or end of half. So I'm just putting that out there, just so you know. So I want to put that. We need to gloss over. Look at that. That's the story of my career, is that picture where I'm getting dragged to the ground, because that's the type of offensive line protection I had. How are you supposed to throw the football if you have a guy hanging onto your arm? That's my question. You can't expect a guy to go out there and have success with that, right?
Yeah, no, that's tough. That's tough. You were fighting an uphill battle there, and my team's won in Atlanta. Those 6.4 points per game and like 26% from the 3-point line, they're not the greatest. There's a lot of stuff to do in Atlanta. Atlanta's a fun place to be. Like, Atlanta was always one of those cities where, like, you were gonna have drinks in Atlanta. Like, when you went there, like, you were just gonna, there was gonna be something to get into. You could find your way to a bar. Like, there was gonna be something. I'm not blaming that on my 26% for 3-point line, but like, just suffice to say, there was a lot of stuff you could get into in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think we talk way too much about the LA effect or the Miami effect. The Atlanta has a sneaky effect on the road teams too, because not only there are bars and there are other type of nighttime establishments you can frequent too, if it's you're so inclined to do so. All right, we're not going to do any of that, because we're all business this week. We are working this week. All right, welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. The Farmers Insurance Open was Tiger's first event of 2019. I thought he was respectable, Raja. Like, I thought it was exactly what I wanted to see from him. He made the cut. He finished tied for 20th his last day. Sunday, shot a 67, so he showcased that it's still in there. I didn't think he was going to win this tournament. I was hoping he would. Like, I was rooting for him. But I thought he showcased to me that he's healthy, that he's ready for competitive golf, and I think he's going to be exactly where he needs to be when April rolls around and it's time for Augusta, because I think those are the tournaments at this point in his career, those are what he cares about the most, are the majors.
Yes, this was a get your feet wet, get back in the flow type of event for Tiger. And from my perspective, I just wanted to see that everything looked solid, Danny, right? Kind of like you. I wanted to see that there weren't any hiccups in anything that he was doing. And there wasn't for the most part. Like, yeah, you know, he didn't crush it like fairways hit, but he never really does. His irons got better as the week went on. His putting seemed to get a little more solid as the weekend went on. And so, you know, that's all you were looking for his first time out. I don't know that anyone really expected him to jump out in his first tournament and win it. You just want to see that he's continued to build on the momentum from last year and everything is still solid. Because as the season ramps up, like if his game is solid, he will ramp up with the season itself, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And Justin Rose went on to win. I thought the worst thing for the PGA was Justin Rose had a pretty comfortable lead. It just wasn't very competitive. It wasn't like must-see TV. You got to get Tiger in that leaderboard in top 10 sort of to get that type of fan interest that he's going to command. But there's no doubt in my mind that'll happen at some point soon down the road too, as he's scheduled to play a couple more times before the Masters. We talked a little bit ago about Nick Collison getting his jersey retired for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and we thought both of us thought, like, man, this guy was like, he played his whole career there, but his numbers didn't really justify it. Now you've got Kevin Durant is planning to make the return trip to Oklahoma City just to give him a little love, just to show him support. I don't know. I guess I should be used to this by now in NBA circles when everybody's out there, everybody's friendly. I mean, it's an old teammate. I get it. But he's going to go make the time to do it out of his busy schedule. I don't know. Are you surprised by this?
Well, no. I think it speaks to, like, the relationship that Nick Collison had there and that the relationship that those guys had on the team. Like, Nick was a really, really good – you know how they say sometimes, hey, man, that guy was a good pro. You know, they're not always talking about whether he was a – like a 20-point-a-night guy or whether he was a number one receiver or a featured back. Like, they're talking about the type of human being he was, type of guy he was in the locker room, the regard that other players had for him, you know, whether he would sacrifice for the team. And Nick Collison kind of checks all the boxes as being a good pro. His teammates loved him. And so it is a legacy type of thing for Nick Collison there with Oklahoma City. He spent his whole career there. And he was beloved both by fans and players. So it's not surprising that KD is going out. I actually like to see that because so many guys are asked to come out for the big names, you know, for the Shaqs or the Steve Nashes or the Scottie Pippins or the what have you. Like, I think it's pretty cool that Kevin Durant's making some time out of his, you know, carving a little time out to go out there and honor Nick. Did we lose
All right,
Danny?
So I know Raja has stopped talking because I can see his face in the screen there. But I'm going to roll us out here for some Super Bowl props, Raja, because we're going to break down this whole game. You just respond to me. I don't know what you're saying, but I'll just get there and laugh. You just keep that smile on your face, and we'll assume it. Super Bowl props. These are very important bets right now. These are my favorites that we see when the Super Bowl takes place. The first one, ultimately, is Super Bowl coin toss. Which will land first? Heads, or which will it land on? Heads or tails? Tails never fails has to be the mantra, right? That's the only way you can go if you're calling the coin toss out there. Tails never fails. First offensive play of the game, the favorite right now, is a run play, which is minus 150. The pass play is plus 120. I do think if you saw, he's giving me hard write him. I like it. Although our feed is so blurry that I can't even read it right now. I got to get my glasses on. The first offensive play of the game, will it be a run or a pass? Run is clearly the leader in the clubhouse, but I think there's some value in a pass play because the Patriots are not afraid to pass it. And I think Jared Goff, I think Sean McVay might come out there with a little bit of a play action pass too, just to kind of keep them off guards. This is fun. This is awesome. I love the signs that we're getting too. Will the quarterback catch a pass? This one, insane odds. Plus 600 says yes. No says minus 1,000. But look at what we had last year. We had two attempts. We had the Philly special where Nick Foles actually caught it. And we also had the Patriots tried to run it earlier in the game and they dropped it. So I don't think it's that bad of a value play there. Lastly, when you look at will there be a missed field goal attempt, I say absolutely yes. Kickers are basket cases in the biggest stage. Zuerlein's milking a bad foot. He's going to miss one. Yes, take the value, plus 110. There will be a field goal missed in this game. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. I think we'll have everything ironed out and figured out. And Rajah will be here tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you later, Danny.